Hello, and welcome to Tales for Life. In each episode of this podcast, we'll explore a folk or fairy tale from a different culture or region and discover the life lessons, values, and morals they offer that we can use today. Join me on the journey through the magical and meaningful world of folk and fairy tales. Welcome back to the Tales for Life podcast, the podcast taking you through life one story at a time. I'm glad you've decided to join me for today's episode titled, There Are No Shortcuts. We live in a world where we want everything to be quick. We used to send letters, but now we send text and can hardly wait 10 seconds for a reply. Full meals are delivered to our doorsteps in under an hour. Miracle drugs offer to fix our weight or other ailments in as little as one dose, and on and on and on. If it's not now or immediately after, it takes too long. Except that's not how life works. Life is a process, and any shortcuts taken in that process will break it. You can't get to the top of a flight of stairs by stepping on the first step and then suddenly being on the top step. You can't win a marathon by just running the first mile and then the last, skipping the other 24 in between. That's not just cheating, it's not even accomplishing the goal you set out to achieve. In other words, you can't do something by not doing it. The concept of hard work and getting there the right way is likely as old as society itself, but one of the more enjoyable tales illustrating this lesson comes from Norway, and was put into writing more than 150 years ago. This particular retelling, because I can't speak Norwegian, was published in English more than 130 years ago by Andrew Lang in his Red Fairy book. It's titled The Seven Fools. There was once upon a time a couple of poor folks who lived in a wretched hut far away from everyone else in a wood. They only just managed to live from hand to mouth and had great difficulty in doing even so much as that. But they had three sons, and the youngest of them was called Cinder Lad, for he did nothing else but lie and poke about among the ashes. One day the eldest lad said that he would go out to earn his living. He soon got leave to do that and set out on his way into the world. He walked on and on for the whole day, and when night was beginning to fall, he came to a royal palace. The king was standing outside on the steps and asked where he was going. "Oh, I am going about seeking a place, my father," said the youth. "Wilt thou serve me and watch my seven fools?" asked the king. "If thou canst watch them for a whole day and tell me at night what they eat and drink, thou shalt have the princess and half my kingdom. But if thou canst not, I will cut three red stripes on thy back." The youth thought that it was very easy work to watch the foals, and that he could do it well enough. Next morning, when day was beginning to dawn, the king's master of the horse led out the seven foals, and they ran away, and the youth after them over hill and dale, through woods and bogs. When the youth had run thus for a long time, he began to be tired. And when he had held on a little longer, he was heartily weary of watching at all, and at the same moment he came to a cleft in a rock where an old woman was sitting spinning wool. As soon as she caught sight of the youth, who was running after the foals till the perspiration streamed down his face, she cried, come hither, my handsome son, and let me comb your hair for you." The lad was willing enough, so he sat down in the cleft of the rock beside the old hag and laid his head on her knees, and she combed his hair all day while he lay there and gave himself up to idleness. When evening was drawing near, the youth wanted to go. "I may just as well go straight home again," said he, "for it is no use to go to the king's palace." "Wait till it is dusk," said the old hag, "and then the king's foals will pass by this place again, and you can run home with them. No one will ever know that you have been lying here all day instead of watching the foals." So when they came, she gave the lad a bottle of water and a bit of moss, and told him to show these to the king and say that this was what his seven foals ate and drank. "Hast thou watched faithfully and well the whole day long?" said the king when the lad came into his presence in the evening. "Yes, that I have," said the youth. "Then you are able to tell me what it is that my 7 fools eat and drink," said the king. So the youth produced the bottle of water and the bit of moss which he had got from the old woman, saying, "Here you see their meat, and here you see their drink." Then the king knew how his watching had been done, and fell into such a rage that he ordered his people to chase the youth back to his own home at once. But first they were to cut 3 red stripes in his back and rub salt into them. When the youth reached home again, anyone can imagine what a state of mind he was in. He had gone out once to seek a place, he said, but never would he do such a thing again. Next day, the second son said that he would now go out into the world to seek his fortune. His father and mother said no, and bade him look at his brother's back. But the youth would not give up his design and stuck to it. And after a long, long time, he got leave to go and set forth on his way. When he had walked all day, he too came to the king's palace. And the king was standing outside on the steps and asked where he was going. And when the youth replied that he was going about in search of a place, the king said that he might enter into his service and watch his 7 fools. Then the king promised him the same punishment and the same reward that he had promised his brother. The youth at once consented to this and entered into the king's service, for he thought he could easily watch the fools and inform the king what they ate and drank. In the gray light of dawn, the master of the horse led out the 7 fools, and off they went again over hill and dale, and off went the lad after them. But all went with him as it had gone with his brother. When he had run after the fools for a long, long time and was hot and tired, he passed by a cleft in the rock where an old woman was sitting spinning, and she called to him, come hither, my handsome son, and let me comb your hair." The youth liked the thought of this, let the fools run where they chose, and seated himself in the cleft of the rock by the side of the old hag. So there he sat with his head on her lap, taking his ease the livelong day. The fools came back in the evening, and then he too got a bit of moss and a bottle of water from the old hag, which things he was to show to the king. But when the king asked the youth, "Canst thou tell me what my 7 fools eat and drink?" And the youth showed him the bit of moss and the bottle of water, and said, "Yes, here may you behold their meat, and here their drink." The king once more became wroth, and commanded that 3 red stripes should be cut on the lad's back, that salt should be strewn upon them, and that he should then be instantly chased back to his own home. So when the youth got home again, he too related all that had happened to him, and he too said that he had gone out in search of a place once, but that never would he do it again. On the third day, Cinder Lad wanted to set out. He had a fancy to try to watch the 7 fools himself, he said. The 2 others laughed at him and mocked him. "When all went so ill with us, do you suppose that you are going to succeed? You look like succeeding, you who have never done anything else but lie and poke about among the ashes," said they. "Yes, I will go too," said Cinder Lad, "for I have taken it into my head." The 2 brothers laughed at him, and his father and mother begged him not to go, but all to no purpose, and Cinder Lad set out on his way. So when he had walked the whole day, he too came to the king's palace as darkness began to fall. There stood the king outside on the steps, and he asked whither he was bound. "I am walking about in search of a place," said Cinder Lad. "From whence do you come, then?" inquired the king, for by this time he wanted to know a little more about the men before he took any of them into his service. So Cinder Lad told him whence he came, and that he was brother to the 2 who had watched the 7 fools for the king, and then he inquired if he might be allowed to try to watch them on the following day. "Oh, shame on them," said the king, for it enraged him even to think of them. "If thou art brother to those 2, thou too art not good for much. I have had enough of such fellows." "Well, but as I have come here, you might just give me leave to make the attempt," said Cinder Lad. "Oh, very well. If thou art absolutely determined to have thy back flayed, thou mayest have thine own way if thou wilt," said the king. "I would much rather have the princess," said Cinder Lad. Next morning, in the gray light of dawn, the master of the horse led out the seven foals again. And off they set over hill and dale, through woods and bogs, and off went Cinderlad after them. When he had run thus for a long time, he too came to the cleft in the rock. There the old hag was once more sitting spinning, and she cried to Cinderlad, come hither, my handsome son, and let me comb your hair for you. Come to me, then, come to me, said Cinderlad as he passed by, jumping and running, and keeping tight hold of one of the foal's tails. When he had got safely past the cleft in the rock, the youngest foal said to him, get on my back, for we have still a long way to go. So the lad did this. When they had gone thus for a long, long way, the foal asked, dost thou see anything now? Yes, I see something that is white, said Cinderlad. It looks like the trunk of a great thick birch tree. Yes, that is where we are to go in, said the foal. When they got to the trunk, the eldest foal broke it down on one side, and then they saw a door where the trunk had been standing. And inside this there was a small room, and in the room there was scarcely anything but a small fireplace and a couple of benches. But behind the door hung a great rusty sword and a small pitcher. Canst thou wield that sword? Asked the foal. Cinderlad tried, but could not do it, so he had to take a draught from the pitcher, and then one more, and after that still another, and then he was able to wield the sword with perfect ease. Good, said the foal, and now thou must take the sword away with thee, and with it shalt thou cut off the heads of all seven of us on thy wedding day, and then we shall become princes again as we were before. For we are brothers of the princess whom thou art to have when thou canst tell the king what we eat and drink. But there is a mighty troll who has cast a spell over us. When thou hast cut off our heads, thou must take the greatest care to lay each head at the tail of the body to which it belonged before. And then the spell which the troll has cast upon us will lose all its power. Cinderlad promised to do this, and then they went on farther. When they had traveled a long, long way, the foal said, dost thou see anything? No, said Cinderlad. So they traveled onwards again for many and many a mile over hill and dale. Now then, said the foal, dost thou not see anything now? Yes, said Cinderlad, now I see something like a bluish streak far, far away. That is a river, said the foal, and we have to cross it. There was a long, handsome bridge over the river, and when they had got to the other side of it, they again traveled on a long, long way, and then once more the foal inquired if Cinderlad saw anything. Yes, this time he saw something that looked black, far, far away, and was rather like a church tower. Yes, said the foal, we shall go into that. When the foals got into the churchyard, they turned into men, and looked like the sons of a king, and their clothes were so magnificent that they shone with splendor. And they went into the church and received bread and wine from the priest who was standing before the altar, and Cinderlad went in too. But when the priest had laid his hands on the princes and read the blessing, they went out of the church again, and Cinderlad went out too, but he took with him a flask of wine and some consecrated bread. No sooner had the seven princes come out to the churchyard than they became foals again, and Cinderlad got upon the back of the youngest, and they returned by the way they had come, only they went much, much faster. It was all but dark when they got back to the king at nightfall, and he himself was standing in the courtyard waiting for them. Hast thou watched well and faithfully the whole day? Said the king to Cinderlad. I have done my best, replied Cinderlad. Then thou canst tell me what my seven foals eat and drink? Asked the king. So Cinderlad pulled out the consecrated bread and the flask of wine and showed them to the king. Here may you behold their meat and hear their drink, said he. Yes, diligently and faithfully hast thou watched, said the king, and thou shalt have the princess and half the kingdom. So all was made ready for the wedding, and the king said that it was to be so stately and magnificent that everyone should hear of it. But when they sat down to the marriage feast, the bridegroom arose and went down to the stable, for he said that he had forgotten something which he must go and look to. When he got there, he did what the foals had bidden him, and cut off the heads of all the seven, first the eldest, and then the second, and so on according to their age, and he was extremely careful to lay each head at the tail of the foal to which it had belonged. And when that was done, all the foals became princes again. When he returned to the marriage feast with the seven princes, the king was so joyful that he both kissed Cinderlad and clapped him on the back, and his bride was still more delighted with him than she had been before. "Half my kingdom is thine already," said the king, "and the other half shall be thine after my death, for my sons can get countries and kingdoms for themselves now that they have become princes again." Therefore, as all may well believe, there was joy and merriment at that wedding. I really like that story because it's one of the best examples I've run across that says, in no uncertain terms, that there is no substitute for hard work. Both of Cinderlad's brothers bought into the lie of the quick and easy shortcut, and both paid the price for it. And this leads right into a very important point. While there is a price to pay for not accomplishing what you set out to do, disappointment, embarrassment, whatever, there is an even heavier price to pay by pretending to do it. You can substitute the king in the story for just about any authority figure who finds out you've tried to cheat your way to something you haven't earned. But, more painful than that, think about the shame the brothers endured coming home as people who failed to cheat their way to success. So much shame, in fact, that they would never try anything again. Talk about lives left unfulfilled. On the flip side to all of this is the fact that there are rewards for completing what you set out to do. We might tend to focus on Cinderlad's final outcome, but consider his journey. His brothers had both made fun of him at home, but think of how he felt as he passed up the temptation to go the easy way that both of them had fallen for. Consider how his choices led him to befriend the seven foals, the princes in disguise, and the trust and faith they put in him. Think about the joy he brought to the king, the princes, and the princess when he proved to be faithful and trustworthy. Any one of those rewards alone is fine feather in the cap, but all of them together is pretty priceless. One other thing I really love about this story is that it contains a word of caution. Life throws curveballs. Sometimes the task we set out to accomplish seems pretty simple, but even when it seems like we've made it, there might be some loose ends to keep track of. Cinderlad's task wasn't complete until he had also restored the seven foals to their proper human forms. Again, he could have opted out. He already had the princess and half the kingdom, but he didn't. As a result of sticking it out and yet again refusing to take a shortcut, his reward was even more rewarding than he thought it would be. It works the same for us. We're not all out to win a kingdom, but even the smallest task, such as brushing your teeth, has its rewards. And obviously, the more work you put into whatever you want to accomplish and making sure you don't take the shortcut, the greater your reward when you get there and along the way. Shortcuts are tempting because they're easy, but don't be fooled. Shortcuts never get you what you want or where you want to be. The best things in life take effort, and taking the full journey gives you the joy of the journey and the reward.